Hello and welcome back to the Greater Greener Georgia podcast, where we talk about all things environmental justice. Today we'll be hitting on a topic that hits kind of close to home, the BioLab chemical fire in Conyers, Georgia. And here to talk with us about that a little more is GCV's very own press and media manager, Paul Glaze. Paul, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
I'm so glad you came on today to talk to us about this. Now, before we go into like the full what happened with BioLab, I do kind of want to open up the conversation to talk a little bit more about environmental justice, framing the conversation so our listeners and our viewers kind of know what that is. What is environmental justice?
So, you know, I think there's two definitions here. The definition of environmental justice that the government uses, that a lot of people point to, is when every community has the ability to impact the laws and the rules governing the environment, and where no community gets a disproportionate negative impact from the use of that environment. I think today some people think about that, you know, within the context of, capitalism, think about it within the context of the climate crisis. And, you know, I think that also means, ability to live in a world that is sustainable, and where everyone has access to things like fresh water, you want to be able to take your kids to the lake and there'd be fish in the lake, and go camping in the mountains and they'd be beautiful and, not just wildfires.
Now, let me ask you this. Is environmental justice as a term, is that different from like the environmental justice movement, right?
We say that the environmental justice movement started, and if anyone knows better, please correct us, comment, and let us know. But started in North Carolina in the late 70s and beginning of the 80s. So in 1978, there are these trucks, like hundreds of trucks carrying the soil with what's called PCBs in them, which causes cancer.
Right.
And they just illegally start dumping them along the road. So the governor decides that they have to go somewhere. So he chooses a landfill, in his mind, in the middle of nowhere, in Warren County. Warren County is also where Ella Baker is from, where she grew up. So this is a majority black county. It's very rural. It's about an hour and a half northeast of Durham. I've actually got some family from right around there. They go to dump. It's like 280 tons. Of this soil in this landfill, and the local community, and some civil rights folks, because like I said, Ella Baker's from here. There's a lot of folks that come from this area. It's produced a lot of really incredible activism over the years. Start laying down in the roads to prevent the trucks from getting to the landfill. Over 500 people are arrested, but eventually they do put all that soil there. Atlanta's own Reverend Lowry was a part of this, and it kind of forms a whole new wing of the civil rights movement. And that's where we say the modern environmental justice movement started. But, you know, indigenous folks have been protecting the land and protecting the earth, from people that are there to extract, since extractors began. There's always been environmental justice and there's always been an environmental justice movement. But I think today when we think about environmental justice, TM trademark.
Right.
It's that kind of legal definition.
Yeah.
And then movement refers to whenever people come together to, to safeguard the earth.
So that situation that you just gave, the scenario that you just told us about was in Riley. Mm-hmm. Are there any notable environmental justice movements that happened here in Georgia or events that happened here in Georgia?
Oh, I mean, certainly. A recent example, I think, is and GCV's own Neil Sardana was part of this with Juliet, Georgia, and with the coal ash ponds. Georgia Power disposes of this coal ash, and over the years, this does tend to get into the water supply, and it does cause cancer. It does cause these different things. I think we live in a generation that the joke is like everything causes cancer, right?
Right.
Like, you might as well smoke a cigarette because like you got plastic in every part of your body. But the truth is that because of that, companies like to say, well, you don't really know it's because we dumped this toxic waste over here, right? Like, it could have just been, you know, the McDonald's toys.
Right.
And you can't prove it. But, you know, the people in these areas get disproportionate cancer. Another one that I love to shout out because it was formative for me as an activist is in Gainesville, Georgia, they built there was a huge tornado in the 1930s, wiped out most of the town. And FDR even comes to town. There's actually a little statue of FDR in Gainesville, Georgia, because he came to town and used New Deal money to help rebuild the city. And they put all that trash in a big pile, and they only allow black folks to live on top of the pile. And wow. So that is called Newtown. Historically, on the south side of Gainesville, when you take 985 up and you hit exit 22, that area, they actually then built a highway over a lot of it, is called Newtown. And people in the community kept getting throat cancer and kept getting these different kind of rare diseases, mm-hmm. like diseases you don't expect to happen, much less like
five
people in a 1 mile radius get it. And some of the matriarchs of the community got together, and they would start laying flowers at all the graves. And that became what's known as the Newtown Florist Club. But over time, they started saying, wait a minute, why is this keep happening to us?
Right.
And so they started mapping it, and they started tracking it and putting it down on paper. And over time, were able to show that there was these disproportionate rates of all these different diseases, specifically in this one part of town. And they started leading what's called toxic tours. President Bill Clinton actually took one, came to town, and the current executive director, Reverend Rose Johnson, I believe her mother helped lead that tour. You know, she's still out there doing the thing. But you know, it's a kind of a not well understood thing, but in most industrial southern cities, we're accustomed to thinking of the South as this like very agricultural rural place, but there's a lot of industry in the South.
There is.
And anywhere that there's industry in the South, there is probably a local environmental justice fight that has happened that you might not have heard about, because no one wanted to talk about it except for the members of that community.
You know what that puts me in the mindset of? So it's like hindsight is 20/20, right? We've all seen those commercials that were like, did you use talcum powder in the 80s? And that's what I think, you know, not to make
asbestos light. Was the big one for forever, right? It was like, you still get some, but you're like, oh, there's still people out here. I mean, my grandpa died years ago.
I mean, my high school was built in like the 20s. Like, I'm sure right, there's asbestos in there. So that's always what my mind goes to. And then you have all of these lawsuits and things that happen later. But I think with the way news spreads, the way information spreads now, this with advancements in technology and science, we are learning these things a lot quicker. And some of the stuff, mm-hmm. I won't even say learning quicker, we know ahead of time. And that's where like holding these industries accountable comes like really, it gets really mm-hmm. like interesting. And that's a perfect segue into the BioLab incident. So let's dive into that. Can you first just give a recap of like what happened?
Yeah, so if you don't know, so BioLab is a company that's owned by, you know, a larger company. It's owned by a larger company. But BioLab makes the chemicals that chlorinate your pool. That's what you use to clean pools. And what that is you know, if you can imagine, you get your pre-workout before your workout, or you're making your powdered lemonade and you pour it in, mix it up, and it's lemonade. They make these chemicals that interact with water to then spread over the course of the water.
Gotcha.
And clean the pool. They're all chlorine-based for the most part. So what we have been told is that there was a sprinkler malfunction in this big factory. BioLab is the biggest company in Rockdale County. Rockdale is a little bit south, really more east, but southeast of Atlanta. Conyers, it's about, without traffic, it's a half hour on I-20 East, if that helps anybody. Used to be a lot of horse country, but it's been developing a lot recently. Smaller community, I think 100,000, 150,000 people. So the sprinkler system goes off, and water gets into some of the chemicals. And there's a lot of chemicals here. I mean, we're talking, this is a warehouse. And what happens with the water and these chemicals, if there's just more and more chemical to hit, is that it can actually combust. And it's the night shift. There's somebody on duty. He's trying to, you know, he sees that there's some smoke. And so he tries to find the source of it. He finds the source of it, but he can't get the water off. Can't shut that off, and there's too much of it for him to block. You know, so they call emergency folks. But by the time that happens, basically the whole thing goes up in smoke. And it's flames too, literally. But it's literally in smoke. And so, like, these are things that I have learned since this happened, right? Like, this is not stuff that I was, you know, I didn't go around knowing that each different color of smoke means a different chemical is burning or a different combination of chemicals is burning. But it shuts down I-20. 17,000 people-ish have to evacuate that area. So pretty much the whole of downtown Conyers. And then another, let's say 80,000, 100,000 people are in like kind of the direct zone of this. But it burns for a month.
What?
And like when you see this, I'm talking smoke like you would think that a large missile hit. You would think that a skyscraper fell. It's that size plume.
Smoke.
I mean, huge, billowy smoke. It's orange. It's gray. It's yellow sometimes. It's red sometimes. You just... And the whole... even if you're driving in your car, you're driving an I-20, and it smells like a big indoor pool. It smells like you just entered the YMCA for miles and miles.
What was the impact? Did people die? Did anybody have any major health issues? Like, what happened in this major community before we talk about outside?
So, you know, it's important to say up front that to our knowledge, no one died. Mm-hmm. This is the fifth fire at this facility since 2004. We are aware of people having died a couple years down the road from 2004 fire. And it is the kind of thing, for context, if anyone knew about the East Palestine fire, or train derailment and all the chemicals spilled there. It was kind of quote-unquote worse chemicals there, but this was 10 times that amount of chemical in terms of volume.
So I'm gonna stop you for a second. This is not the first fire that BioLab...
No, this is the fifth that we know of since 2004. And if you count... actually, also, the company has factories in Louisiana, and the same thing happened there in 2020. And they actually got that facility shut down. But it was a big storm came through. This BioLab fire happened two days after Helene came through.
Oh, yeah.
If the rainwater from Helene had gotten in the way it happened in Louisiana, this would have been a catastrophic situation.
Wow.
But no, you know, the members of the family of the DeKalb sheriff were impacted by the 2004 fire. It was a big deal. And this is the fifth time. So this is not like a, you know, accidents happen and right. That's a thing. But no, this is a repeat negligent company. Mm-hmm. If there's a definition of a bad actor in the book, it ought to have the picture of BioLab next to it.
The fact that this has happened multiple times, I'm number one surprised that this company is allowed to continue to operate in such a heavily populated area, at least, right? Like, I am sure, you know, industries, people need their pool cleaners, I guess.
Right. It's funny also, yeah, because it's such a random product, right? It's not like, you know, you don't expect you don't expect to have to go to the hospital, and 1,000 people went to the hospital because of this. Yeah. You don't expect to go to the hospital because of like lemon scented Swiffer wipes.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah, you think like, oh, there's a big oil refinery next door. Well, maybe that's a problem one day, you know? But like pool cleaner, it's no, but chemicals are everywhere in our life. It's a huge industry. It's one of Georgia's big industries. And it, at the time when they first moved in, which I think was in the 90s, Rockdale was a much smaller place.
Yeah.
And so you had a small county, older community, still pretty rural, and that was a lot of tax money. You know, that was a lot of jobs and a lot of tax money. I don't know how many of the jobs are people actually in Rockdale.
Rockdale, right.
Versus people in Gwinnett or people, you know, in DeKalb, in Henry and Newton, around there. But the county has really grown since then. So in a lot of ways, it's not the same place it was in 2004 even. It's grown a lot, and now it's really and truly part of Metro Atlanta.
So, you know, GCV had a pretty, Georgia Conservation Voters had a really quick response to this. We organized press conferences. We got folks on the phone. This is what GCV does. We tackle these type of issues. So talk to us about GCV's response, their rapid response, and kind of what that looked like, and what issues did we want to focus on when we first found out about this?
You know, so I think we've got some experience with this kind of thing from COVID.
Yep.
And when there's a situation like this, people really just want access to information, right? Like at a certain point, you can't take the 20 million gallons of chlorine out of the air. So that ship kind of sailed. So what we did first was we organized just some informational sessions. One of the scientists at Georgia Tech that did the work on that air monitoring that I mentioned earlier, we were able to get them to come on to, you know, like an informational session online. Daniel Blackman, former EPA Region 4 Administrator, was able to get him there so that people could hear from folks that have some expertise in this kind of area, that could give this is the information that we think you can trust. Here's what we're hearing and what is not, you know, we can't back it up or not, but this is what they're saying. And it's important to do that because as much as you want to believe that people are going to be forthright and honest about things, these are complex situations. No one wants people to panic. And so often there's an instinct, I think, from local government or the company to not kind of say it like it is. There's also real reasons and incentives for people not to share all the information that exists. You know, and until it's verified, you know, I think it's pretty common for someone to say, well, yeah, maybe it's in that pond over there, right? Maybe that pond's toxic, but we don't know yet. So, like, let's not panic anyone until we know for sure. But what we found was the EPA said that the state EPD, which is the Environmental Protection Division on the state level, was handling it. And the state said that the national EPA was handling it. And then the EPA said, well, actually, we're relying on the company to monitor itself.
Okay, so that just sounds like a lot of buck passing.
It sounds like that. And whether it might not be, right? This is a rapidly evolving situation. It's a crisis. You're talking about trying to coordinate information amongst, you know, 6 to 7 immediate county governments, the state, the federal government, the company,
who's there's responsible,
right? There's a lot there. So I don't want to minimize how complex it is, but there was no one taking responsibility.
Right.
And as much as, I think Rockdale County first responders, really jumped in there and put themselves on the line. You know, we also see video of firefighters, taking selfies in front of the plume while they're spraying water on it, without gas masks on. They didn't have gas masks on their folks. And I don't know if anyone remembers this, but a lot of the firefighters that worked on the World Trade Center after 9/11 ended up getting lots of diseases from working on the pile. Got to meet some of those many years ago. So it does matter how we prepare for these things.
And so I know this is like a developing case and like things are changing and happening in real time as we're talking about this. And it doesn't seem like it's going to be going anywhere anytime soon. But who are the leaders in this movement? So if people did want to look to someone to follow, to ask questions, to go, who's leading this movement and how can people get in contact with them?
So different people in different counties. If you are in Rockdale County, then I very much encourage you to reach out to EFAT Walker at Community Action Now, or to Larry Cox, is a local business owner, former Republican, now he's an independent. Just, you know, that shouldn't matter in this situation, but just so people know that it's not all a bunch of lefties out here. And, you know, is very knowledgeable on the situation. Cheryl Garcia and Corliss Turner with Voices of Rockdale are really great people. You can always follow us, Georgia Conservation Voters. We're going to be involved in this. If you're in DeKalb County, I would recommend you reach out to Reverend Kiana Jones with Sierra Club, who's doing a lot of great organizing. And, you know, there are folks all across the way. In Newton County, Ina Bragg is the farmer that I mentioned earlier, and she runs a group called iUrban Farms. And, you know, this the coalition is growing, and we're really hoping to use this as a test case and example to make sure that in our whole metro region that we all know what to do in a case like this, and we can decrease the response time each time it happens. Georgia Tech actually just got grant funding to really analyze the whole chemical plume and tell us exactly what was in it. So if we can have infrastructure like that ready to go, then maybe next time, no matter who's in charge of the federal or state government, no matter what the company is and what they say, we'll be able to get something independent that says, no, this is what you breathed.
Yeah.
You know, but those are folks. And yeah, I definitely encourage folks to stick around with us as well. Or go to www.shutdownbiolab.com and follow along there and join up. We meet twice a month and, you know, not planning on going anywhere.
And, you know, I'll definitely be keeping track of what's going on. And our viewers and listeners can as well. If you're interested in knowing more information about what's happening with BioLab, updates, please follow us at gcvoters.org and follow us on social media at gcvoters. Thank you so much, Paul. I appreciate you coming out and hanging out with us and talking to us about this. And we look forward to updates.
I love hanging out. Thanks.